Hi everyone, and welcome to the final part of our storage space MVA course. My name is still Ola Skog. I work as a technical evangelist in Sweden, and with me I have this time
Michael
and Marcus. Michael and I are both MVPs and work with this daily.
So, in the last parts, we have talked about the architecture, we have talked about design, we have talked about the performance, and in this final part, we will talk about everything else, and a little bit about architecture, design, and performance. The idea with this last part is to, we call it lessons from the field, and we will talk about some tips and tricks and some things to consider and think about that Michael and Marcus has experienced and learned from all their different customer engagements and from their labs and from their
real life experience.
Yeah, so we actually fire out and build these things and we do it enough number of times to remember a certain pattern. The certain pattern is that this is most likely to happen the next time we go to the customer. And it's very impolite to tell them what they are going to do wrong the first time we meet them. So we never do that. But we really can see the pattern. We ask the same question and most of the time we get the same answers. And so we already have prepared a bunch of answers they can.
We will talk about what the customer need to do before they build it. They need to know what they need. We will talk about hardware. We will talk some about automation and we will get back to performance and we will talk a little about disaster recovery things and that you need to test that. And we will also talk about some common misconfiguration things.
Yeah. And so we want to tell you this so that you can avoid these.
No, they can surprise us next time we meet them.
Yeah, exactly. They can do that.
And we don't have time to go into the details on everything, but this will be more like an eye opener, hopefully. So when you try to build this, try to remember what we talk about and try to dig a little yourself into it.
And some of the things we're going to cover is going to be things that you go like, yeah, I know that. Of course that is. And then there's going to be another topic that says, oh, I didn't know that. So it's going to be high and low. And the first thing that I would like to start with is that it's very important that you know exactly what you need. I know that sounds very stupid sometimes, but the need is, we need storage. And then we start asking them.
Now, basically, I would like to say that usually Michael and I ask the customer, what do you need? Yeah. And then they tell us, well, I don't know, but it needs to be faster than we have today.
Yeah.
And then we ask them, okay, so how many IOPS, how much bandwidth are you using today? Mm-hmm. And the answer is more or less always.
We don't know.
I don't know, yeah.
So what's the specification of the existing SAN? I don't know. Do you know the vendor? Yeah, I know the vendor.
And they said it's fast.
Yeah, and it was the fastest SAN you can ever buy for money 4 years ago. Okay, and in some cases they need different performance of the speed of the disks. We need this for running virtual hard drives, but we need this for a backup solution, or we need storage spaces for something else than virtual machines. So you really need to know what you need to have it for. Just having it doesn't really work.
So this goes back a little bit to the first part where we talked about different architectures.
Yes. Yeah.
So you need to know what you want regarding performance and things like that. Is there some way you can measure this, or do you have any tools that you... of course, I know what you will answer, but
there's a bunch of different tools. Microsoft has one, the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, which is decent, good enough.
Maps.
You can use that for measuring the current load of your virtual machines. That works.
Just remember that if you run it, you first of all you want to run it for a longer period of time, not during a weekend when the systems are not actually used. That will show you that you have no load at all in your environment. So run it during a busy period, which It's more or less a week or two.
Yeah, the last week of the month tends to be a good week because companies are ending up with bookkeeping and numbers and all that stuff. So there's more people working in that. But if you know what kind of period that will be the most busiest part in your company, that is a very good time to measure.
So we have maps. We can probably also use some of the tools that the vendors provide.
Yes, statistics. At least you can use that information to figure out on what day of time of the day or week or month or whatever is going to be the busiest time. And then you can use that time and use maps to measure it, or you can actually measure it directly and get information from the vendor system.
But also remember the fact that if your SAN is currently running at more or less 100% utilization, if you run maps, it will show you how much the virtual machines actually get, or the hardware, or the servers actually get.
Yeah, not really what they need.
Exactly.
So, but you can combine that by using, so inside the virtual machine, you can start measuring the disk queue length.
Yeah.
If the disk queue length is 0000, well, then you have a system that actually delivers enough. But if you are in the 5, 10, 15, 20, I think I saw 60 or 70 not long ago. And yeah. I was like, do you feel that this system is slow? Yeah, yeah. Slightly. it's even hard to log on. I've seen above 100, but that was a while ago. That's really slow, right?
Yeah, so you want to be below 5.
Yes.
Before you start to build, you need to look at this, but you also need to consider what kind of solution, what do you need when it comes to resilience, for example? That's also...
Yes, the resilience level. How much should you be able to lose and still have a working solution?
Yes. And so it's very common that people go like, oh, we want to have a three-way mirror. Okay. So how much do you have today? We have two. Okay, and you're satisfied with that. Uh-huh. So why would you have three-way mirror when you have a two-way mirror today? Oh, because you can. Well, you're also going to lose a lot of disk space that you might want to use for other things. So you need to do a risk analysis. How much, as you said, can you afford to lose? And how long time will it take to rebuild, recreate, and put you back in business?
And how much volume do you need?
Yeah.
Because... The higher resilience, a three-way will use a lot more volume compared to a two-way. So if you have a need for a huge volume, then you might need to go down to two-way mirroring.
Yeah.
Or parity.
And we even seen customers saying, well, you know, maybe we should have like a two-tiered mirror solution. And that's good. SSD drives and physical hard drives. But maybe, yes, maybe a parity drive with a few SSD drives will perform, you know, decent enough, and the cost for that will be slightly cheaper since you can have most likely only two SSD drives or four SSD drives instead of 24 of them.
Yeah.
So as long as you know what you need, it's easy to help.
And just a small tip that I know that you always tell your customers, keep spare parts on the shelf, right?
Yeah. We like to recommend our customers that a single JBOD box is quite cheap. And so buy one and have one on the shelf. Because if an enclosure fails, then it's really easy to just take all the drives, put them in a new enclosure, and plug it in, and everything is back up and running.
Yeah, so a good indication is that if the first time you ordered the JBOD, it took them 4 weeks to deliver, there's a slight chance that the next time you order one, it's going to take them 4 weeks to deliver. So since they don't cost, maybe you can have...
Yeah, and the boxes by themselves are redundant. So the question is, do you really need three-way mirror or to be able to lose an enclosure and still be operational, or can you have one spare and just move the drives in case one would fail?
Yeah, I think we had a customer doing that. They were designing the solution for whatever they did, and in the end, it turns out it was easier to just do a two-way and then say, well, then we don't need the last JBOD. It's going to be on the shelf, and that's going to be a really nice spare part. They go like, yeah, you're right. That's, you know, it's smarter.
And also, of course, have a couple of spare hard drives. And remember, if you buy a solution and plug in like 80 hard drives today, in a couple of years, they will have the same amount of age, the same amount of wear, and when one starts to fail, there is a risk the rest are going to fail pretty soon as well.
Yeah, that's something you learn when you have a car and you have two headlights. When the first pops, the other one is very soon to be broken as well.
So when you have decided about the performance and the thing and the resilience level and things like that, you need to start calculating.
Yes, do the calculation. If I do it this way, this is approximately what I will get. This is the approximate speed that I could achieve, and this is the amount of data that I can transfer through in and out from the system. And then you do like a kitchen planner system. Well, if this is one configuration, this gives me this. This is another one. So you have a couple of different configurations that you can pick and choose from. And then you make a decision. Well, that's the one I'm going to go for.
Yeah, and remember to size the tiering, the hot part of the solution, so it can contain enough data to be able to deliver fast performance.
Yeah.
For so, as always, know what you want before you start to build it.
Yes.
To summarize.
Yeah, and that's actually number one. And number two.
Care about hardware.
Yeah, it has over the years. It's becoming more of the server is just a server.
How much the hardware?
Yeah, it doesn't matter what CPU you have. It doesn't matter. It's just it's just going to work. It's true. It's just going to work. The problem here is that you would really like to have good performance, and have a performance system. It's not the same thing as just having something that works. So it does matter what kind of CPU you have. It does matter how many CPUs you have, and so on and so on. So a couple of things. The HCL.
Hardware qualification list, yeah. Or certification lists.
It's very nice. I mean, if you find a server and you say, I think this is going to be a good one, just check it out. If it's on the HCL list, well, then it's tested with Windows, so it should be good. The JBOD, same thing. The HBAs.
Yeah, the HBAs, absolutely.
Network adapters, all these things. Nice to have network adapters. The networking part is actually very important because that has different capabilities. Should I go for a 10 gigabit Ethernet or a 40 or a 56? Should I do RDMA? In that case, which one of them? Is low latency going to be important for me or not? Maybe it is. In that case, low latency means RDMA. Okay, then you need to have that. Well, which one? Is it going to be a Rocky V1 or V2? Is it going to be an iWarp maybe? Or do you want to do InfiniBand? Because that also then determines the switches you're going to have on the other side, and that also determines other things in the infrastructure.
And I would like to add that in the last episode, we talked about the latency.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to keep the latency low, but it's not sure that you really need RDMA.
True.
Because if you're doing a kind of a local installation, the RDMA won't really help you until you get into 40 or 56 gigabits.
Correct.
But some customers might have a data center in another city or doing stretch clusters and things like that.
And then you need it for another purpose because you need to have the low latency on a distance instead.
Yeah.
So it's true. But you really need to start thinking of it. And I know that there are people saying, well, you should go for like 40. Why? Because you're going to need it sooner or later. And maybe it's going to be sooner. So if you don't have the network equipment today, check the price tag for these systems, check the vendors, and maybe you need to check other vendors than you are usually buying network equipment from, because there could be other vendors that delivers better performance, high performance, better, because all of them are not going for those RDMA-based network systems.
And also remember that if you scale your JBOD solution, the hard drives, to deliver like 6.5 gigabytes per second, as we saw previously, if your network cards can't keep up with that, then you will have a bottleneck.
Yes.
So make sure that you have enough PCI slots in the server to host both old HBAs and the enough network adapters.
Yeah. And that's why the CPU actually matters. So people ask, how fast should a CPU be? I don't really need fast. I need a wide CPU. I need a lot of PCI lanes. I need to be able to run everything in a wide mode instead of running just the high performance, peak performance. Yeah. So that's why we should have never used like a desktop CPU. You're not going to do that, but those are designed for interactive applications. We need something that is really meant for server applications.
And you usually need two CPUs to be able to use all the PCI buses in the servers.
Or four if you have one.
And so on.
Yeah. We know that most of the time we get hardware, the firmware is incorrect.
It's old,
needs to be upgraded, it takes time.
And the firmware is both in the all the firmware in the server, the HBAs, the network adapters, the hard drives, the SSD drives. Everything has to be the latest and greatest to make sure that it's compatible and working as intended.
Yeah, so one of the things that we usually tell the customer is that if all the firmware is upgraded, we will save a lot of time when we come to your location. And they go like, yeah, absolutely, we can do that. But it's not really hard to find all the firmware. So in most cases, we need to do the firmware upgrade anyway. And that costs us a half a day or maybe a day just to do a firmware upgrade. And
it's a quite slow process.
It is. And it's extremely boring.
In the previous episode, we talked about the power profile and the hardware. So we won't repeat that except remember to set it.
And the drivers. Latest drivers. And you should also do one other thing. You should keep these drivers that you are using. Because if you do need to reinstall the system, there's something wrong, it needs to be reinstalled. At that time, hunting for drivers, well, then you could have later drivers that doesn't work. So then you need to maybe find the old drivers. So
or
I just keep everything.
Or especially if you want to reinstall one of the SOFS nodes, storage nodes, then you want to have the same set of drivers on both of them.
Exactly.
So reinstalling one and adding new drivers on that one, then they will be out of sync, so to say.
Which is bad.
Yeah. So a lot of hardware things to think about.
Yes, it is. It's really funny because it's usually the really old guys at the customer that they go like, yeah, I know this stuff. When the young kids go like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So, which is kind of cool.
So the next thing we'll talk a little about is automation.
Yes, there's multiple reasons to do automations. And one of these are we automate so we do have the ability to do a repeated installation, test, crash, reinstall, test, crash, reinstall, and so on and so on. So it's a part of the disaster recovery solution. Here's the documentation in PowerShell. Oh, the customer says, can I have the documentation in Word? No, you can't have the documentation in Word. You can have the documentation in PowerShell because PowerShell can actually reinstall the system exactly as we did the first time, which is very nice and very convenient. So that is a part of the disaster recovery solution and documentation.
And also part of the troubleshooting.
Yes.
Because when you do run into problems, which you might do, then it's really, really nice to be able to easily reinstall the whole system within an hour or something.
Yeah.
Instead of doing next finish, wait for it. So automate everything.
And currently we use native PowerShell or old style PowerShell. In the long run or in the future, I think most of this configuration will be created by the side state configuration because then I can have a DCS file and say, well, this is the storage node, and I can apply that. I can even reapply that to... So if Marcus does some kind of strange modification, I have a... We have a rule that says, well, you can't change that because we changed it back anyway, which is very convenient. Then another reason is that the first manual install you do is not going to be great. The second one is not going to be great. But the worst thing about this is that it's hard to remember what you did the first time. So even if you do a manual installation and you do it repeatedly,
you need to do it a lot of times to remember exactly how to do it. So it's better to have scripted installations. If it doesn't perform correctly, modify the script, reinstall the machine again, and keep doing that until you have it.
And also, when we do the performance testing and all this, and when we test the system to make sure that it's fail-safe, we're going to pull some cables to make sure everything is working. And do you really want to run that in production afterwards after we've crashed it?
It's like having buying a used car. It used to be a crash test dummy car, and we sell it really cheap. You don't want to have that. I agree.
So, we did a lot of PowerShell scripting in the second episode. Mm-hmm. So some of that, we will share that stuff, of course.
Yes.
So that's like that's a good thing to start with.
It is.
If you haven't worked with PowerShell that much.
Absolutely.
So about performance, thoughts about performance.
We did cover that in the last episode, but I want to repeat that it's very important that you are perfectly satisfied with the performance you get before you put it in production.
Yeah, we usually spend 2 or 3 days with performance testing the storage solution to make sure that we get everything we need.
Yeah.
And
but that also includes troubleshooting,
reinstallation,
retesting. So if everything works smoothly, directly, that could be a day.
Yeah.
But in many cases, there is something that is wrong. Firmware that is bad. And it takes a while to figure it out. So somewhere between 1, 2, maybe 3 days, that's what it takes to do all these performance testing.
And something we have seen a lot of customers miss is that when they do all the performance testing, they get really crappy numbers. They get some strange things. By just doing a next finish configuration, so you use default values instead of using all the different parameters in PowerShell, has proven to give really good numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's not working, try a default configuration and see if that works or if you get the same result.
Yeah. And even if you in the end maybe want to tune something, this is at least a start. This is a troubleshooting
It is,
tool.
Absolutely.
If you do it like this and you notice that it actually works, then it's probably nothing wrong with the hardware, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
And then, you know, there was something misconfiguration I did. Well, then you can get that configuration and then you can see this is what I get and this is what I try to do. Okay.
What's the difference?
Let's modify one parameter at a time until I can figure out what did I do wrong. We also have seen customers saying, well, I did performance testing and it was really good or really bad. And then we asked them how. I took a file and I copy it. How? Yeah. In Explorer. Okay. Was it, you know, you had bad performance? Yes. Because I took a file from my local hard drive and I copied that to the storage. Then I took the same file from the storage and I copied it back to the local hard drive. Okay. So what you are actually doing here is that you are measuring the performance of your local mirrored operating system boot drive, which is the cheapest SAS drives or SATA drives you can ever find. So that way to measure is nothing you should do.
And we mentioned some of the tools in the last episode,
yes.
But the main thing is probably to learn one tool, learn to understand the results of the tools and learn to really fast see if there's something wrong.
Yes. And in the PowerShell script that we're using, we disable all the buffering and hardware offloading stuff with SQLio to make sure that we're getting the raw performance.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, in the operating system later on, it's going to use the caching mechanisms and that. So that will just be a added extra benefits.
Yeah, bonus.
A bonus, yeah.
One thing that in the beginning of this building a solution for the customer happens is that they are anxious about how do you repair things? How do you replace a drive? What happens? How does it show up in the event log? And unfortunately, during the time it takes to build, configure, and make everything done, they are so happy
that they are so close to put it in production, and then we say, well, didn't you want to know what happens if a drive failed? Yeah, so let's try that. Let's unplug one of the drives. Oh, shouldn't we turn it off first? No, let's unplug, let's rip two drives. Let's rip three drives. Let's unplug the SAS cable. Let's plug the power. Let's break it. And then you can see what happens in the event log. Then you can see what operation manager says. And then you can also learn how to repair this. So you really want to repair things on a system with no vital data on it.
Yeah, you don't want to learn it live. No. So spend a day or two to test everything. And when that's done, reinstall, once again, reinstall everything with the help of the PowerShell scripts that you did previously.
Yeah, we don't like the photo album when someone took pictures of every dialogue box and then stored that in a book. We call it the photo album. That's really not a documentation, but we've seen it from time to time.
So your experience tells you that you want to break things before you put it in production.
And our experience tells us that we always reinstall the storage nodes several times.
Yes.
You never do it just once. So you will need the PowerShell scripts.
It's for the customers that we have done it for, they become much more confident on how to fix things, because then you know, I plug a drive. Okay, so this is what happens when a drive is broken or missing. Okay, did my automatic repair function work? Yes, it did. Oh, great. Then I know that works. No, it didn't. Oh, I missed some configuration. Or maybe they didn't have that. Maybe they had a spare drive. Did a spare drive work? Yes, it did. No, it didn't. Oh, there's something wrong. Well,
yeah, did we get the alarm in the System Center Operations Manager and so on?
It's just having that to see that everything works it made me, the first time I did it, it's like, yay, I made it correctly. It's the right configuration. Everything works as expected. So you become more trustworthy in the solution.
More confident.
Yeah, more confident in the solution itself.
This applies to all infrastructure, I guess. I mean, servers and everything.
It does.
You really need to try to destroy things once in a while.
Yeah, but it's something that most customers doesn't do.
Maybe with if you build a storage-based solution, it's probably a new solution, and it's before you really have a chance to do this before you put it in production.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my takeaway. That's the point. You have the ability. Once you put it in production, it's like a car that you started to drive. Now, when you are driving on the highway, gassing it when driving is problematic.
That brings me to another. I got a question actually yesterday from a customer.
Mm-hmm.
They have two soft nodes.
Yeah.
Connected to our fiber channel to a SAN.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me, okay, Marcus, we would like to buy 3 JBOD boxes and add to our softs cluster.
Yeah.
Should we do that? And our response is no. Technically, you would be able to do it, but if you have a storage solution that's up and running in production right now,
mm-hmm.
do you really want to shut it down and add 3 HPAs with drivers to one node, start it, take down the other one,
mm-hmm.
add the same another set of HPAs and drivers, start that one, and hope everything is working and that you don't get any blue screens or bad drivers, firmwares, whatever, in your production environment? Isn't it better to, in that case, buy 2 other softs nodes for the JBOD boxes?
Yeah, because it's just 2 basic servers. I mean, they don't need to cost that much.
No.
Now, we've seen it before, and everything that you really believe is going to be a super simple, snappy thing tends to be a, oh my gosh.
Oops. I didn't think of that.
No, that wasn't funny. That was 160 hours spent on a drive that didn't work. And so we try to avoid modification. We try to explain to the customers that once you load it, the storage solution, it's like a car. It's driving. You can't stop it. It's in production. You do what you need to do, but when you do have the option to build another parallel system, you do that. Moving data from one system to the other one is fairly easy. That's just move data inside a VM, so that's safer.
So let's finish with some common misconfigurations.
Yeah, we can do that. Let's start with the 8.3.
Yeah, the 8.3, the old MS-DOS short names mm-hmm. that still lives in the OS today, even though we use long file names.
Mm-hmm.
If that is still enabled, the scale-out file server service will not really work. The witness service.
Exactly. It kind of works. It's just that it doesn't really work with the SMB multi-channel, which is going to be the equivalent for multipath IO. So it doesn't have the ability to fail over sessions between the nodes. Meaning that if you turn off one of the nodes, the behavior is pretty much like cutting the wires inside a server and then glue them on the other server on the fly. There's a dip when you actually lose connectivity. So the 8.3 is very important to get rid of. There's two ways to do that.
Three ways.
Oh, three ways?
First of all, if you use the wizard.
Yeah.
The new server manager wizard.
Yes, and you create the GPT drives.
Yeah, then it will be disabled.
Correct.
Another way is to use the fsutil.
Yeah.
To disable it.
Yeah.
And the third one, which is the one I prefer and like, is to use a group policy, which exists, that disables the 8.3's file names on either all the volumes or on the data volumes.
Since we're running a 64-bit operating system, we don't really have any 16-bit application in the data center anymore.
No.
And even if we did, they couldn't run. So we really don't need 8.3. We've seen people misunderstanding this. They install Hyper-V on the scale-out file server nodes. Now, you can't do that. And if you were supposed to run Hyper-V on them, that will be fine. But what they do is that they install Hyper-V and then they create virtual network switches for the scale-out file server because they think they need to do that at the same way they do on the Hyper-V host. And no, you don't need to have Hyper-V installed on the SOFS node. No, we don't need network utilization. If I have a network adapter, I would configure a network adapter. Some of them have configure for low latency or configure for file server storage or something like that. So we've seen it a couple of times.
We saw it just the other day. A customer had from three of their hosts compared to the other 10, they had bad performance. When mm-hmm. a virtual machine was running on one of those three hosts, mm-hmm. it had disk queues and bad performance.
Yeah.
But all the other VMs running on all the other hosts were working fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that on those three hosts, the network adapters were not configured for low latency.
No.
So when we changed that, everything was working fine as expected.
So we shouldn't install the Hyper-V role on a scale-out file server node. A scale-out file server node is a scale-out file server node. Unless it's a very small environment, then you can do it, but it's not relevant.
Let's say you can't.
You shouldn't. And the other one is going to be a friend of us called Multipath IO or MPIO. It needs to be configured.
Enabled.
It needs to be configured for SAS drives. And it might need to be modified. Maybe round robin isn't the correct setting. You need to ask either the vendor for the SAS drives or SAS solution what they do recommend, or you might need to change it from round robin to least queue length or block or whatever it is. But there's a couple of settings, and you may be are enforced to try some of them or read upon them. Default setting is sometimes working and sometimes not.
It's always working. It's just that
if you change those settings, you might get a little bit more performance.
Yes, and you might get a better performance when shifting from one scale-out file server node to another. Otherwise, the traffic will go through the server nodes and it's going to be slow. But one of the biggest problems we have is actually the networking design. This is it's very documented.
Absolutely.
Yes, it's very documented. There's a lot of blogs around this. But what people are missing is this. You have two nodes here, right? And you're creating a scale-out file server on this storage spaces. And when you create the scale-out file server node, the cluster role, it doesn't have a disk. It's just a share, okay? So you have the share, you share the folder, everything is fine. Now, the problem is that it doesn't have an IP address either. So the question is, how do you reach it? Well, it's going to inherit the IP addresses of the cluster nodes, okay? So this cluster node has one IP address and this has another one on the same subnet. Well, then you don't really have SMB multi-channel because you only have one connection to each server. And
for clustering, it's seeing the subnet as one network.
Yes. So it needs to have multiple subnets, which means that you do have multiple network adapters to gain performance. But all these network adapters should also have different IP addresses. So it's going to end up in multiple networks because we need to have that. On the corresponding side, on the other end, where you have the Hyper-V host, well, these guys also need to have IP addresses on those networks.
Or be able to reach those routes,
yes,
through the routing, but yeah.
So you really need to have the correct network configuration. The bad thing about this is that even if you don't do these things, it's going to work.
It looks like it's working.
It's just not being redundant, and you have really bad performance sometimes. But the non-redundancy thing is the bad one. It looks like it's redundant, and you can shut down one of the nodes, and it's going to work from time to time. But when you log on to one of the servers, it might say the previous shutdown was unexpected, and you don't get it the first time. But when you have the same information on all the 45 servers running, you realize that this guy just must have lost his hard drive. Yeah, for a very short while, but it was cut off. So the network IP subnet configuration, multipath IO configuration, don't do Hyper-V on scale-out file service node, and make sure that the 8.3 is gone and never enabled. If enabled, you might need to use the fsutil to clean the drive out so all the short name files are gone.
But there are scripts out for that, so just search for it.
Yeah.
Cool. So that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
A lot of information and a lot of things to go deeper with if you want.
Yeah.
So this was the final part of our storage spaces course. And if you have any questions or comments or anything like that, feel free to contact us.
Mm-hmm.
You can contact me, Ola, if you want. My contact information will be on this MVA site and in this video. And you can probably get in touch with Michael and Marcus as well. But I can speak for them. But if you contact me, I can talk to them.
Feel free to contact us. We are working for TrueSec. So just search for us.
My email address is over here.
We are on Twitter. We have blogs. We have email addresses. You can find us on Facebook.
Yeah.
You can more or less, I think all three of us it's pretty easy to reach out.
Yes, we are.
So, and we're more than happy to help and answer any questions you have.
Absolutely.
So thank you, Michael. Thank you, Marcus. This was very, very good, and a lot of lessons learned. And thank you for listening. And get in touch if you have questions.
Perfect. Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Det är svårt att man inte förbereder exakt vad man ska säga, men det blir säkert bra.